Hey guys, it's Chris, and I'm back with James from Dust on the Throne, and we are back with A Dragon Raised by Wolves, Part 5. I think I may have figured something out here about this damn endgame.
I think he has.
So let's get into it. Let's figure out how and why this thing's going to end. Dragon Raised by Wolves, Part 5. So let's jump right into it, but first let me throw out a few announcements. We're going to do another giveaway.
Yes, we are.
So this time it's going to be a Blu-ray set of Season 7, and it comes with the bonus material and all that good stuff, which I have yet to see myself, but yeah, I will drop ship you guys a Blu-ray set from Game of Thrones Season 7. So I'll tell you how to enter that at the end of this video, and the link will be in the description below of how to do that. You can get several different entries.
18.
18 total if you want to. Patreons, you guys are already entered as usual. But anyway, let's get into it. In Dragon Part 1 through 4,
yes,
which has kind of become a big deal in a drinking game on this channel.
That's right.
We wanted to get into and put out there very early in the sense of there's two books left, how this damn thing's going to end. It started primarily, we called it A Dragon Raised by Wolves because it was, you know, centered around Jon.
It did, and he was the dragon who was raised by wolves. We laid a foundation.
We did. We started with the premise that, you know, he's special because of various reasons, mainly the symmetry. He is ice and fire. He is not ice to Dany's fire.
Nope.
The Night King is ice. Dany's fire. He's both. Obviously, that's the whole meaning. And we went through a lot of different reasons through four parts, a lot of details as to how we got to the conclusion that essentially this is basically the conclusion that the Night King is headed towards the God's Eye.
And what I'd like to say is that, you know, we put that out early.
Yes.
Put it out very early, and we're still locked in on this.
We put that out there, and like you said, it was early. It was over a year ago.
Yeah.
And I've seen it since a lot. I've seen it online. But I highly recommend you watch those, and I'll link the little playlist to that down in the description before you watch this video, because this time we're going to talk about the detailed why. Exactly. Why the God's Eye, and what's actually going to happen there, in my humble opinion.
I think this cat right here has stumbled upon a few things that really sure it up for me in my mind anyway.
Yeah, so I've been, you know, racking my brain, right? And me and you have talked about this several times, of trying to figure out, you know, the secret to this thing. You know, what am I missing? The God's Eye stood out a while back because it's something that's mentioned early, it's mentioned a few times, and then it's kind of left alone, almost like the others themselves. You know, you don't know it's
exactly
a story about them for a while because they're in the prologue. They show you it's about these ice demons, then you forget about it for three or four seasons.
Right.
So I was trying to kind of back up the God's Eye idea with more than just, you know, conjecture and that type of thing, with how can we establish a link between the God's Eye, the Isle of Faces specifically, the God's Eye being the lake, the Isle of Faces the actual location, I should make that clear, and the others themselves or the other White Walkers. I know that he wrote this out of order. I know that, let me say this
right
up front.
Yeah, I want you to get this out there because when you told me this, it was really eye-opening and it makes perfect sense.
Right, so when he first started writing this, the first part he wrote was the scene where they find the direwolves. And so he didn't know what he had at the time. You know, he just saw this scene and he started writing it. He didn't know what it was. He kept on writing it. Of course, then when he kind of went through and had him, you know, wrote down the basic, I guess, outline or whatever of this whole entire story, he went back and changed a lot of things.
Sure, you'd have to.
He rewrites chapters. He reorders chapters. He adds things, you know, all the little hints. So I went back and I was like, I need to establish this link. And so I was thinking I need to go where the Isle of Faces is first mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The Isle of Faces is first mentioned in the third chapter, technically. Technically, it's the second chapter, but Catelyn 1 of A Game of Thrones. So you got the prologue, you have Bran 1, then you have Catelyn 1.
Right.
That's the first mention of it. Very, very early, and I would assume that was added later.
Yes,
because
just like the prologue probably was.
Exactly, I'm sure that was written completely out of order. Specifically, there is a descriptive sentence in there when she first mentions the Isle of Faces, and she also mentions the Green Men and their Silent Watch. Yes. So I'm scouring this little paragraph here, looking for the adjectives, the descriptors, you know.
Sure.
And the only one that really stands out is the word silent. Because otherwise,
there's a lot of different adjectives.
You could have said the green men and their watch. You could have green men and their
stoic watch. Their
anything. I mean, yeah. Anything or nothing at all. But that's the only adjective there to describe the green men and their watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I started thinking, what are they watching over? They're watching over a grove of trees. I mean, there was a pact signed. We know that from history.
Right.
The agreement was to chop down and burn out no more trees.
Exactly.
And all that kind of stuff. And you could say, well, they were guarding from the Andals, because I thought about the Andals. They came later, but they didn't know they were coming. And then, of course, they did come. They did try to do the same thing, but they eventually settled in into society, and they never touched the Isle of Faces. So what are they guarding, and why are they guarding the place where the pact, you know, was signed?
As far as the pact goes, for, you know, those of you who probably already know, it says the pact was forged there. No more weirwoods were to be put to the axe anywhere in the realm.
Exactly.
Are they, like you said, are they literally standing there silently worried about axes coming across
exactly.
the water?
Exactly. It's right. I mean, what are they actually guarding against? And we know, again, as we mentioned in previous videos, that we have only two people in this entire story that we know that have visited the Isle of Faces. And that is Hallen Reed, of mm-hmm. course, a big character.
Huge.
Linked to RLJ and everything else. And Adam Valerian during the Dance of the Dragons. Now, they both went on to do pretty intense things as far as the story goes. Hallen Reed kind of got Lyanna involved with Rhaegar, in a sense, with the Knight of the Laughing Tree.
Mm-hmm.
He studied with him, whatever that means. Adam Valerian went on to help a decisive battle in the Dance of the Dragons to beat the Greens. So, pretty important stuff.
Right.
And then, so it's kind of mentioned a few times, and it's more than just world building. It's mentioned in a few places, and then kind of glossed over. So anyway, to get into a few things, just to kind of throw out, I think, the importance of the God's Eye and why we think this is specifically the place. In Danny's first chapter, you have...
This is all a
Game of Thrones.
This is what gets me, guys.
This is all a Game of Thrones. You have Danny's first chapter, and she's remembering things that Viserys has told her about Westeros. She's never seen Westeros whatsoever. And he throws out specific locations, she does, in her thoughts, about places that were just words to her that she has never seen.
She's heard of.
And she mentions places like Castle Rock, the Eyrie, High Garden, and specifically the Isle of Faces. She mentions the Isle of Faces. So that's there. You know,
right.
It could easily have been Castle Rock, High Garden, King's Landing, and Winterfell, or
There's
the North,
a
or a million places, but that was specifically in there. And to back that up, in John's fifth chapter, after joining the Night's Watch, before he takes his vows, he's thinking about, should I really do this or not?
Yeah. Second thoughts,
you know,
cold
really,
feet.
Yeah, really getting the idea of like what this place is going to be like, and Tyrion was right, and all this kind of stuff. He's riding out of Castle Black, thinking about going home.
Yeah.
Before he becomes a traitor or a deserter, and he thinks, okay, Winterfell's down this way, and all these other places that I'll never get to see. And of course, he names off Castle Rock, the Red Mountains of Dorne, and of course, the Isle of Faces.
That's just too weird to me.
So you keep seeing, yes. Now you could say, well, Castle Rock was mentioned twice. But Castle Rock is mentioned throughout the whole book.
Yes.
The Isle of Faces is in there in two major characters right off the bat, and it's mentioned again. And that's three major characters' chapters right there that is already mentioned early on in this book. I mean, very early on. That's
mm-hmm.
early. And exactly what you just mentioned, Bran 7.
Right.
His seventh chapter, early on in Game of Thrones, that's where he mentions the Order of the Greymen for the first time. So, going back to the thing that trying to link, or at least find some little hint as to kind of link the White Walkers or others with the Isle of Faces,
yeah.
The word silence, what stood out. It's the descriptive word, like you mentioned. It's the only thing in there you can really look at and say, okay, they describe the Greymen or the Isle this way.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we look and see, like, for example, the others of the White Walkers, are they described in a similar way?
Yes, there are similarities. I'll just say the one thing that I found, and I'll let you play off of that. All right, you've mentioned the silent. Okay, they're both silent.
Both right? silent.
In A Storm of Swords, Bran 2, he says, no one visits the Isle of Faces. That's where the green men live.
Right.
All the tales agreed the green men had strange magic powers. Well, we know they have strange magic powers, too.
Right, and Bran would eventually acquire those.
Silent, strange powers, take it from there.
Exactly. So the point is, there's a lot of places in these books where this is thrown around. It's not overdone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there, kind of under the surface. A Storm of Swords and Bran II, you really get a lot of that because that's when they're heading up towards the Wall with Mira and Jojen.
Yeah.
And they're telling these stories. Mira specifically is telling these stories to Bran. She thinks he should have heard these stories from his father. And she's talking about his father visiting the Isle of Faces. So it's mentioned many, many times there. Linking the idea of the Green Men or the Isle of Faces, which are essentially interchangeable for the context here. You know, the idea they're there guarding something for whatever reason. And then linking them with the others or the White Walkers to see if that, because to me, I'm just trying to put myself as in a writer's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
If I was to go back and rewrite that prologue later, which after the book was started, and I realized, okay, here's what's going to happen, have an outline, I need to add this, and I need to kind of sprinkle hints.
You know that's happening.
So let's go to the prologue.
Right.
Right there in the opening. Let's go to the prologue. So, the only word, as we said, the first time the Isle of Faces is mentioned, is silent as far as the Green Men. So I went back to the prologue and searched for silent. Now, it is a common term, but it didn't have to be that way. He could have used other terms. They could have been completely different as far as the way they moved and everything. Mm-hmm. But here's a little list of things in the prologue that describes the White Walkers as silent. The first time we hear the word silent is about Will.
Right.
Will is described as silent, and that's why the Night's Watch likes him, because he can move well. He's a great ranger.
Yes.
The quote actually is, "No one can move through the woods as silent as Will, and it had not taken the Black Brothers long to discover his talent." So there's your first silent right there. Now, that's fine, but Will could have just been quick.
Right.
Or nimble or anything, but
right.
He chose...
Had a keen eye or... You know,
something. Yeah. He was silent. That would come in handy later, of course, when he climbed the damn tree.
Damn right it did.
In the same exact chapter or prologue, Garrod. Garrod's obviously the other Night's Watch guy with Waymar Royce. And Garrod, his quote goes like this. Garrod glared at the lordling. The scars around his ear holes flushed red with anger where Maester Aemon had cut his ears away. "We'll see how warm you can dress when the winter comes." He pulled up his hood and hunched over his Garen, silent and sullen. Okay? Silent and sullen. I mean, it could have just been sullen.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, it could have been just pissed off or angry. Some simple descriptive word.
Mm-hmm.
But silent and sullen.
We're not taking every time he says silent as that sentence and that context being important. We're saying he could have used other words.
Right, exactly. And then, of course, you have in the prologue, you have the others when they actually attack. The first time you hear of them, and again, this is literally the first chapter in the whole entire story. So we have our first actual direct reference to the others, and it says this. "The other slid forward on silent feet. In its hand was a longsword like none that Will had ever seen. No human metal had gone into forging of that blade." So right there, on silent feet, the first direct reference to the others, or the White Walkers, using the word silent.
And the first direct reference to the Green Men...
used the word silent.
The very first one for each.
Exactly. Used the word silent.
Mm-hmm.
Another direct reference, now this, of course, is after the White Walkers have shown up, and Will's in the tree and all that good stuff. It says specifically this, again referring directly to the others.
"They emerged silently from the shadows, twins to the first, three of them, four, five. Sir Waymar may have felt the cold that came with him, but he never saw them, never heard them."
So yet another reference to silence. I mean, they could have been loud and obnoxious because
Absolutely.
They're powerful. So, but he
Screaming,
chose...
Screaming, come just roaring in.
Right, he chose this kind of ninja method, right, of coming in or whatever. And last but not least, in the same exact prologue, we also have another little quote here during the same, you know, dance... So to speak, of swords
right.
with the White Walker. We have behind him, to the right, to the left, all around him, the watcher stood patient, faceless, silent, the shifting patterns of the delicate armor making them all but invisible in the wood. Yet they made no move to interfere.
Four to five.
I think it's 4 to 5 references to the White Walkers themselves, and every single paragraph or sentence that describes them in some way uses that word silent.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'm not looking for any other things because this is the theory I'm trying to kind of support, but that's, again, that's the only word you can look for because as far as the Green Men and the way they're described the very first time they're actually described.
And I believe that when the new books come out and the green men are described more, that word will pop up again and again.
Right. So I think, you know, and take it for what it's worth, I think that gives us more of an indication as to where they're going as far as the end game of our story. I think that helps solidify it for me a little bit as far as the end game.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the why? What about the why? So let's get into the why and what's I think is actually going to happen now at the God's Eye and why they're going there in the first place. Are they going there to just kill the children like we talked about, meet their maker, that type of thing?
Yeah, we talked about that in part four. All right, so we've talked about how, you know, these weirwood trees are special.
Yes.
As far as what you've termed, and I don't know who coined it, weirwood.net.
Yes.
All right?
Absolutely.
You know, it seems like, and we've discussed, does Bran need to be near one to have his visions? And I'm of the thought that it's an interconnected, almost nervous system, or however you want to, whatever analogy you want to come up
right.
with.
I believe so too. Absolutely.
And if there is a huge grove of them on this island, and they all have faces, that, you know, there are some outer spots of trees that have faces that do, I believe, connect to that.
In some way, shape, or form, whether that's a root system, because in the books there are a lot of caves and underground systems described. So that gets down to the point of the importance of the God's Eye, right?
Why
is it important? So if you hear, as I mentioned earlier, there is a little grove of weirwoods north of the wall where Jon and Sam go take their vows. And it's described as being essentially unheard of, because usually they're found in groups of three or four, something like that. But there's nine there where they go in the books. Obviously, the show is just one tree, a little different.
Yeah.
But and they're facing inward. The faces are all facing. So you take that as a place of, you get this circular type imagery again, this symbolism of this circle. And the faces are all inward in the books. So they're all looking in. So this is a place unlike any other in the north. So in the south, you have this huge grove that's being guarded for whatever reason.
Right.
And to me, I started thinking about what makes it important other than just a vast number of trees. So I go back to the very beginning of the book, and you have Catelyn 1 again, or Ned's chapter as well.
Right.
Where Ned's sitting outside and being informed of Jon Arryn's death.
When he's cleaning his sword.
Cleaning his sword, all that good stuff. And you hear Catelyn kind of describing her POV from being in the north for a while, because she's kind of a southern lady from the Riverlands.
Right.
So, you know, Faith of the Seven. And she specifically talks about the northern gods.
Yes.
And she calls it a heart tree. And that is actually in quotes in the book. So, it's called a heart tree. So, I never really put much thought in that before, because it just, to me, it points out, okay, it's the central point of this location. So, you have a God's Wood, which is the tree area, you know, the wooded area.
Mm-hmm.
And in the center, you have a heart tree.
Right.
But then I started thinking about, with the God's Eye idea.
Expand that whole idea.
Take the idea of a heart tree not just being the center of the actual location, but what it, the word heart itself is actually the organ, in a sense, if you use that analogy, that makes everything work.
Right.
Or you could say the brain, for that matter. But, you know, the hearts also can be interchangeable with mind. You know, it's in our hearts. I love you with all my heart. You know, that type of thing. So it makes me think that the importance of the God's Eye is... It makes me think that the importance of the God's Eye is if you take that out, the rest of the body no longer functions. As you were saying with the connection, the link there.
It's the heart.
So it's the heart tree for a reason. Not just, I mean, almost literally in the sense of it makes everything else work in the land.
Right.
So I think the God's Eye is the brain of this weirwood.net, the central nervous system.
Yeah, yeah.
The heart.
Like you said when we were discussing it, it's like the CPU, if you wanted to use that analogy.
The CPU, exactly. So, if you have a CPU, a heart, and you want to go by the idea we talked about in parts 1-4 about, you know, maybe the Night King wants to, you know, end the curse and kill his makers, whatever, what do you have to do? You got to cut out the heart.
you got?
So I started looking a little bit into the books again and tried to find some references to,
I love this,
cutting down or burning weirwoods. So here's what you got. And this is from, again, early on in the Game of Thrones. So we have more quotes for you. We really want to pull out a lot of, you know, canon book material here to support this. So we have Catelyn 1 again, the same chapter that introduces us to the God's Eye.
Right.
And the Isle of Faces and Green Men. You have this quote. In the south, the last weirwoods had been cut down or burned out 1,000 years ago, except on the Isle of Faces, where the Green Men kept their silent watch. Up here, it was different. Every castle had its godwood, and every godwood had its heart tree, and every heart tree had its face. So there's her describing the gods, like we talked about a minute ago, and the northern beliefs, and you know how there's a heart tree in the middle of every godswood up north. Different gods, different customs, all this good stuff.
Yep.
So she's given, you know, in the context of her thoughts, her own thoughts or whatever, she's just kind of explaining to the audience, us the reader.
Exactly.
It's a different world up here. But if you start adding this up with the following, it starts to kind of fit this little puzzle. So you also have this. Mm. Catelyn 1 again, A Game of Thrones. At the center of the grove, an ancient weirwood brooded over a small pool where the waters were black and cold. The Heart Tree, Ned called it. Now, again, that's Catelyn 1. That is where he actually, it's where it's actually quoted, the Heart Tree, for the first time. It's a quote in the book. It's
right.
Actually got quotes around it.
Which is, yeah.
So that was kind of supporting the idea we just talked about, being the heart, the central nervous system, the CPU, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you're using that logic, you to take something out, to end something, to end this magic, which we know they're magical trees, you take out the heart. A Storm of Swords also has a little hint here from Davos 1, and it reads, at Melisandre's urging, he had dragged the seven from their sept at Dragonstone and burned them before the castle gate, and later he had burned the godswood at Storm's End as well, even the Heart Tree, a huge white weirwood with a solemn face. So there you go. That's talking about Stannis being kind of controlled or brainwashed by Melisandre.
Right.
As she convinces Stannis that he is Azor Ahai or whatever, so he adds the flaming heart of Alor to his sigil, his stag. He burns the seven idols of the false gods. And specifically, she has him take out the Heart Tree because other religions are blasphemous to her or whatever. But it opens the door to burning the Heart Trees, burning the actual weirwoods.
Right.
So I started searching for burning weirwoods. And here we go. In the same book, A Storm of Swords, we have John 11, and it reads like this.
John, Melisandre was so close he could feel the warmth of her breath. R'hllor is the only true god. A vow sworn to a tree has no more power than one sworn to your shoes. Open your heart and let the light of the Lord come in. Burn these weirwoods and accept Winterfell as a gift of the Lord of Light.
She's directly telling John to burn the damn weirwoods.
Right. But you mentioned in that quote, burning weirwoods and open your heart. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
She's going to say, open your mind.
And this is relating to John again and Melisandre. So Melisandre really comes into this as far as, I think, kind of telling us what needs to happen unknowingly.
Sure.
So we also have this in from John 3 in A Dance with Dragons. It's kind of a follow-up. And this is before he obviously dies.
Mm-hmm.
We have this.
You have your gods and she has hers. Leave her be. She won't let our gods be, argued Toad. She calls the seven false gods, my lord. The old gods, too. She made the wildlings burn weirwood branches.
You saw. So, in A Dance with Dragons, following up A Storm of Swords, the same kind of thing here. John's now Lord Commander, and Melisandre has been having the wildlings burn weirwood branches. Now, that in itself, okay, it's kind of cool. But when you think about also the male chapter in A Dance with Dragons, where she sees Bloodraven and Bran.
Yes.
And sees them in her visions, right, in the fire, part, in the flames, and see, because she sees the boy with the wolf's head who leans back and howls, all that good stuff as well. She automatically aligns them with the enemy, the great other. But she is unknowingly telling us that
she's telling us
John needs to burn weirwoods.
Right.
So, what do I extrapolate from all that?
I'm thinking you're saying the weirwoods on the Isle of Faces need to be burned.
That's what I'm saying.
Get the heart. Kill the heart.
Kill the heart.
the magic dies, which is what he's wanting, I believe.
Right.
You know, he's got this magic curse on him.
Exactly. The idea is, we talked about in parts 1 through 4, really in part 4, as we kind of summed it up, was that, you know, he possibly wants to end the curse, meet his maker, all the above for that matter.
Sure.
So we talked about, and to add on to that, we talked about that we don't think that Dragonglass is going to work on him.
Right.
We've said therefore, Valyrian steel. Right. And the show almost kind of helped with that as well, with the whole walking through the Dragonfire thing in Season 7.
It really did.
Not only that, you had in Season 7 them on an icy lake and on an island right in the middle.
In the middle.
So again, you got this circular symbolism with something in the middle. And all those cave drawings from Season 7 had all the circles, which I believe was the God's Eye anyway. I said that in a separate video when I kind of broke down what I thought the symbols may have meant. Just right. At least some basic symbolism. Not that it was too over the top for the show.
Mm-hmm.
But when you read these things in the book and these quotes, you can kind of picture this circular thing with a dot in the middle type thing. And they put that in the show for us to see visually.
Sure did.
So yeah, it boils down to, with that evidence that, okay, John, more than likely John, needs to end that magic. To kill the Night King, he will have to burn the Isle of Faces, maybe with Dragonfire. So yeah, I mean, I think that's still bitter in a sense, as far as the bittersweet ending that we're supposed to get, because you're talking about ending a culture for good. The idea is that the Night King can't be killed unless you remove that. Maybe you can't remove it somehow physically.
Right.
I mean, who's got the power to reach in his chest, or can you cut him open? We don't know if Valyrian still even cut him.
It was literally put in, though, with magic.
With magic.
I mean, so maybe you have to, if the removing thing is the right idea, there's got to be magic involved, maybe. So I'm starting to lean heavily to what you're saying.
Right. So the idea is, if you go back to kind of through what we're saying that the Isle of Faces is the actual heart of the magic, the Northern Ice magic, the Weirwood magic, Weirwood.net, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that's going to have to end in order to end the magic that created the Night King in the first place.
Exactly.
That's how you have to kill him.
Right.
You have to burn the Weirwoods down at the Isle of Faces, essentially cutting out the heart. The heart tree. And then on top of that, you have a lot of little things like Heart's Bane's been pulled out recently by Sam for whatever reason.
Yep. In my heart, I'm kind of thinking that you have nailed the purpose and the meaning of the Isle of Faces, okay? But I can't...
I hope. I mean, we'll see.
I can't decide if I think there's actually a race going on between John finding out that that is the way to do it.
Right.
And the Night King knowing that that's the way to do it. And he's bringing a dragon to end the curse. And they're going there... To do it, to burn it down too, to end him also, and they're almost going to have a little moment there where it's like, wait,
we're doing the same thing. Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's got me worried that maybe they race there, and they both kind of end up going away.
But one more thing that I wanted to add was the symbolism thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good quote from Arya, Arya 1, A Feast for Crows. And it goes like this. "The Moonsingers led us to this place of refuge where the dragons of Valyria could not find us," Dinyo said. "Theirs is the greatest temple. We esteem the Father of Waters as well, but his house is built anew whenever he takes his bride. The rest of the gods dwell together on an isle in the center of the city. That is where you will find the many-faced god."
Wow.
So you have another thing where he's talking about gods. This is Arya has gotten to Braavos. She's looking for the House of Black and White, trying to find out what's going on. And you have this symbolism again of you'll find the many-faced god, many faces, many trees. Now, obviously, it's a different context, but if you think about it, the breadcrumbs in an aisle at the center of the city. This circular, you know, whatever, and which, an island in the middle where you'll find the many faces, the many-faced god in this case, as far as the context. But again, it's little sprinkles.
And it reminds me of what you were saying earlier about when they were taking their vows. All the faces were facing inward on the circular group of trees.
Right.
So if those are actually facing inward,
right,
it's leading you to the center. And
exactly.
As you just said in that quote.
So to kind of summarize or put this all together in a nutshell, I think our what we're basically saying here is, and it is now the why and what.
Yes.
Not just where. So yeah. You have...
Based on geography or
right,
how
or
it just, looks. I mean, now right. You've got something backing that up.
So, yeah, the idea is that he sprinkled the connection to the Order of the Green Men, hence the Isle of Faces, in the very first, in the prologue. You had the connection with the White Walkers directly. They're silent, as opposed to, you know, loud and boisterous and who exactly. Gives a damn, you can't fuck with us type of thing. So that connection, if you take into account the word heart's tree in a different meaning, not just meaning the center of, but the actual blood supply,
right.
So to speak, of werewood.net. And then you have, on top of that, of course, Melisandre. She's trying to convince Stannis, but then she figures something's weird about Jon. She's not quite sure what it is. Something special. She's telling him literally to burn the werewood trees. You heard they were burned out thousands of years ago. So, in order for the Night King to die, you have to now go to the Isle of Faces.
Yes.
And burn the heart to cut off the magic that created him in the first place, which is an ending that would be bittersweet because you're getting rid of essentially a race of people.
Yeah.
And their customs and cultures all wiped out, but you're saving the world in the process, and all magic has to go away. What's really ironic, like you said earlier, is that it's almost the same goal they have. Anyway, I think that sums it up. I think
yeah.
I think that, you know, that's the that's not just the where, but that's the why and the how.
Yeah,
and you know, again, it's just a guess, but it's a guess with a little bit of backbone. So anyway, a lot of cool stuff in there, a lot to think about. So we definitely want to know what you think.
Absolutely.
Is this how this is going to end?
Are we convincing you, or at least swaying you to, you know, jump on board? Because, like I told you, this could be a swing and a miss.
Yes.
But I think it's going to be a foul tip at worst.
Right, yeah, I think so too. I'm fairly confident about it, but, you know, we'll see. But the thing is, that's the beauty of it. We're just talking about it.
Right.
We're having a discussion, and your opinion matters. So you can... Maybe it makes somebody think, that's kind of cool, but what about this? And you add to
it. Exactly.
Or find another thing that supports it. Or find something against it. That's great,
yeah.
Too. Before we get going, also want to mention how to enter this giveaway. So I'm going to give away the 7th season of Game of Thrones on Blu-ray. Also comes with the bonus material and all that good stuff. Really cool stuff. I will drop ship that to the winner from Amazon.com. And so to enter that, there will be a link in the description. It's using the Gleam app. And it's the same thing we've done.
Just like always.
Absolutely.
Here are the different types and amount of entries that you can get.
Yep. And by the way, Patreon's automatically entered, but you can do all of these too as well if you hadn't already.
Right.
To get bonus entries as well. So.
Right. You get 5 entries just for subscribing or being a subscriber.
Right. To this channel.
Right.
To this channel.
So... Twitter, if you follow on Twitter, you get 3 entries. Facebook, 3 more entries. And again, while I'm doing this, I'd like to say, if you already are, it checks it off.
Yeah, it does.
Okay?
Yeah, just kind of verify if you already follow or like the page or whatever.
Instagram, right. 3. If you follow on Twitch and follow on the Smokescreen Gaming.
Gaming, yeah. Just some extras in there because I am doing a little more gaming stuff during the off seasons. What I'll do is I'll draw a winner. I think I'll run this for about 2 weeks, and then I'll draw a winner maybe during one of our live streams.
That's what I was thinking.
We'll probably do a Q&A after this, I'm assuming. Either a live stream or old school style. We'll retake some questions or whatever from your comments. And also, really quick, I want to mention for this giveaway, while you're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, share this video and let's get it out there and see what people think and see if we're right, wrong, or indifferent.
Let's stir the pot.
Exactly.
That's
stir the pot. Exactly. So anyway, guys, thanks for watching and we'll see you next time.